Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the China Geopolitics Podcast. My name is Jared Watt. I'm the specialist digital editor of the South China Morning Post here in Hong Kong. Now, normally we come out with a new episode at the end of the working week, but this week with the emergency meetings of the UN General Assembly, we're bringing you a special update and a reminder that my colleagues in Beijing, Brussels, New York, Washington, D.C., and here in Hong Kong are filing stories around the clock to our website at scmp.com. In this episode, you'll hear analysis of the tectonic shift in policy by Germany and the European Parliament in the past 72 hours that has had huge economic and strategic impact on Russia, but also has huge implications for China's relationship with Europe and its geopolitical strategies. And as usual, about 4 hours after I finished interviewing our reporters in Beijing and Brussels, came news most relevant to our podcast. Late last night, our time, came the important news that China's Foreign Minister Wang Yi had been on the phone to Ukraine's Foreign Minister, offering to host peace negotiations. We are, of course, following that up as we head towards a crucial, if not symbolic, vote at the United Nations titled simply, Aggression in Ukraine. There is much more to come on that. But you're also going to hear from our tech desk editor, Joe Sin. 2 years after our colleague John Carter declared on this podcast that if the US removed China from the SWIFT system, it would be seen as a declaration of war, you're going to hear how Chinese banks and analysts are reacting now that Russia has been banned from the Brussels-based SWIFT system. What does this mean for China's banks and its plans to build its own yuan payment system as an alternative to SWIFT? And beyond that, how are China's big tech companies, multinational companies with extensive markets in the US and Europe, balancing the push for sanctions from the West with the Beijing government's refusal to condemn Russia's invasion, as well as condemning the use of sanctions? We're seeing brief moments of solidarity with Ukraine popping up on Chinese social media before being removed, even brief flashes of empathy on China's state TV. But after Joe Biden's emphatic State of the Union speech denouncing Russia's invasion and support for the people of Ukraine, how will Beijing react? Can Xi Jinping still position himself as a broker of negotiated peace? On with the show. Once again, I have Europe correspondent Finbar Birmingham on the line in Brussels and my June in Beijing. Thank you both for your time on another busy day. Finbar, can I start with you? There are many things about this war in Ukraine that people are describing as unprecedented. Last week, you told us how the EU had shocked many with its resolve, but that was only just the beginning. What's happened over the weekend that we need to know about?
Yeah, I think that resolve has sort of been injected with steroids. We've all been shocked by, I think, the progression in the European solidarity on this and the fact that they've been able to all agree on the toughest sanctions in history. We heard this information yesterday. Last Thursday, the European Council, which is the leader of the 27 nations, met, and they were addressed by video conference by Volodymyr Zelensky, who's the Ukrainian president. This was told to us was the turning point. This is when the EU decided to get tough. Zelensky told them that this may be the last time they ever see him. They said, there's a target on my head. There's a target on my back. I am the number one target. This may be the last time we ever speak. My family are here with me. This may be the last time you ever see my family. And for the European Union leaders in the room, this was absolutely shocking. It really brought home the severity of the situation. The fact that this guy was really sort of putting himself out there emotionally, but in control of his emotions as well. We were told the next day they decided to sanction Putin and Lavrov, which was at that point a huge escalation in their severity of their sanctions. The day after that, everything was on the table. We talked about SWIFT before being the nuclear option. Germany, which had been the last holdout, dropped its opposition to SWIFT, and then suddenly everything was in play. They sanctioned the Russian Central Bank. They decided they would freeze the assets held in the G7 along with partners of the Russian Central Bank. Now, that, if SWIFT is the nuclear option, that is the turbo nuclear option. So the Russian government has $640 billion of reserves held in various currencies, half of which are held in the G7. They have been building up these reserves for a rainy day so that when, if and when something like this does happen, as it happened in 2014, they have a buffer. They have a sort of rainy day fund. Half of that is now unavailable to them because European entities have been banned from doing transactions with the central bank, meaning they can't repatriate the money that's overseas. That's huge. And I want to point to something that happened on Sunday as a marker of how this situation has rapidly evolved. Just a week ago, Germany was being criticized for being incredibly weak on this. They were blocking other European countries from sending German-made weaponry to the Ukrainians. They were holding out on SWIFT, as we said. Fast forward a week, and we are really down the rabbit hole with Germany. We're not in Kansas anymore, not to mix my metaphors too much, but the German Chancellor on Sunday, Olaf Scholz, over the course of about an hour, tore up 40 years of German foreign and defense policy. The government decided that they would start arming Ukraine directly, as well as stopping the blocks on indirect arms. They decided that any opposition to financial and economic sanctions against Russia would be dropped. They decided to bolster their defense spending to 2% of GDP and start a 100 billion euro fund for defense spend. All of these things were absolutely unheard of a week ago, less than a week ago. Now, if you think about how this relates to China, Germany has been the bastion of a strong EU-China relationship. And it's often pointed at as a sort of soft underbelly. You have more hawkish voices in the European Union. Germany has always been sort of dismissed as only wanting to sell Volkswagens in China. It only wants to sell cars. It only wants to sell, you know, BASF has huge plants. That's all the Germans are interested in. But I think on Sunday, the needle was well and truly moved in seismic fashion. Germany showed that it can move much more quickly than anybody ever anticipated. This is not directed at China, but there are lessons for China, I suppose, that they shouldn't maybe, underestimate how quickly things can change. Now, in that same debate in the Bundestag, where Olaf Scholz delivered his speech, German politicians were standing up and saying, where's China on this? We want to hear what China's saying. China needs to come out clearly and it needs to condemn the action. We have more and more conversations in Europe about how much did China know about the invasion in advance. Our reporters in Washington have backed up New York Times reporters, which said that China was given U.S. intelligence signaling there would be an invasion and passed it on to Moscow. On that point, I would add that the U.S. had also been telling the Ukrainians and the Europeans that there was an invasion in the works and they ignored the intel as well. But look, there's a bit of pressure building up. Everybody is watching very, very closely and the Europeans have finally found their backbone. So it makes for an interesting dynamic.
Which, of course, brings us to Beijing. My Jun, yourself, Kinling Low, the other members of the Beijing Bureau for the SEMP, are attending the daily press conferences, are following the statements as they come out. It really does seem that Beijing is trying to pursue this delicate balancing act of insisting on talks but refusing to be drawn on sanctions. What is the latest from foreign ministry spokespeople?
I think the foreign ministry has still largely stick to their positions, which is refusing to condemn Russia, call for de-escalation of the situation, call for dialogue, but in general, expressing a respect to the sovereignty and security of all countries. And third, of course, when it has extra time, would also go ahead blaming U.S. provoking the situation. Yesterday, I think that's why yesterday the foreign ministry spokesman Wang Wenbin's comment has raised some eyebrows and people were wondering whether this represents a somewhat small adjustment of China's stance. So basically, this is what Wang Wenbin said yesterday. Sovereignty and territorial integrity of all countries needs to be respected and maintained. The UN Charter needs to be maintained, and this is China's consistent stance. But at the same time, China has always held that the security of one country cannot build upon the basis of damage to the security of another country, and no country should seek absolute military advantage and absolute security at the expense of other countries' security and sovereignty. I think this is an interesting comment, because it adds to there's a few phrases that it used for the first time, which is no country should seek absolute military advantage and absolute security at the expense of other countries' sovereignty and security. But because first, China has never, even in this somewhat nuanced comment, China did not name Russia, and it did not name which country is trying to pursue absolute military advantage. And a few exchanges with people in Beijing, longtime China watchers would say that these kind of phrases could be used to denounce both the Eastern enlargement of NATO and Russia's aggression. So there, it's not completely clear whether China is criticizing Russia. But I think it's becoming increasingly notable to all people that China did have some reservations about Russia's action. And for instance, China abstained from a few votes in the United Nations, and it also said it upheld the sovereignty of all countries. So in this sense, I do not think that China is making a major shift of its stance, but just a tiny adjustment in its narrative. But I mean, just like what Finbar said, if we put this into a broader context, that Germany was shifting its post-war foreign policy line, and countries like Finland were talking about having a discussion about joining NATO. So among all this sea change of policies in Europe, how significant is this tiny change of word by a spokesman of foreign ministry in China? I'm pretty uncertain about it.
Really very well put there by Maijuna. I read a blog yesterday by Ian Johnson on the Council on Foreign Relations, which sort of summed up the dichotomy quite nicely in one line. I think it takes great skill to sum up such a complex narrative in a single sentence. But he said, even though China wants to position itself as essentially neutral and advocates dialogue, its positions are actually a remarkable defense of Russia and reflect strengthening China-Russia ties. So I think, like, as Maijun points out, these statements are sort of like they're two sides of a coin. On one end, they keep asking for dialogue, keep asking to resolve this around the diplomatic table. On the other hand, they keep talking about the aggressive NATO eastward expansion and so on. And I think more and more of this language is being picked up. We had a story late last night. Kinling Lo, a reporter in Beijing, was at a ceremony in Shanghai to mark the 50th anniversary of the Shanghai Communique. And former US Treasury Secretary was essentially telling China to get off the fence. This is the moment when nations of the world respecting the international order are joining together, condemning Russia's illegal attack on Ukraine. China must decide where to stand and understand that the bilateral relationship with the US will only become more strained in the absence of a clear choice to stand with intervention. I was on a webinar yesterday with Kurt Campbell, Joe Biden's top Asia-Pacific official, and Gunnar Wiegand, who is the Asia-Pacific Managing Director in the European Union. They were saying similar. Kurt Campbell certainly was saying similar. He was confirming that they had warned China in advance of the invasion and that they were wanting China to play a more productive role, more constructive role in this. Gunnar Wiegand, who's consummate diplomat, didn't go as his language is certainly couched in more diplomatic terms than Campbell, was saying that, look, we need to keep the lines of communication with Beijing open. However, we can't help but notice that in the February 4th communication, this was the first time that Russia ever recognized China's officially China's grievances in the South China Sea. And China essentially gave tacit backing to to Russia's territorial positioning in Europe and its views vis-a-vis European security. So I think we are sort of, China keeps straddling this fence really awkwardly, as Kurt Campbell said yesterday. China occupies an awkward nexus on Russia, and it's becoming more and more apparent. It's one of those things where the more you don't say anything, the louder those words become. Everybody's really wanting China to get off the fence and to come out and condemn it. Honestly, I can't see that happening in a month of Sundays. It doesn't seem like it's gonna be happening anytime soon. But I do sort of buy into that theory that this is an incredibly uncomfortable situation for China, which I suppose then digs up the specter of how much did Xi and how much did China know in advance. Again, we probably will never know.
I would like to also offer a little bit of context here, as I was having such a discussion with a Chinese official, and he sort of wanted to present me this context as if where all the other countries are standing. And he gave this number, like the West, the developed economies, if you count the population, like they do not represent the majority of the world, which was what the Communist Party's Yang Jiechi used to tell Tony Blinken during the Alaska talks. So if we look at the developing countries, the major developing economies, the BRICS countries, for example, countries including Brazil, India, and South Africa. And I also looked it up, what Pakistan said. So all these countries, they were all pretty much in line with China in the vagueness in this situation. They did not denounce Russia's aggression. They mostly just in generally call for de-escalation and call for talks. But however, I would also like to point out that none of these countries have such close ties with Russia in terms of security, and none of these countries signed a joint statement with Russia so soon before the aggression took place. So they are under a different spot in terms of international pressure.
That's interesting you raised that point, Marjun. Of course, India has a very long-running relationship with the defense industry of Russia and a bit of an economic relationship as well. What I thought was interesting is that we talk about, you know, what's going on in Ukraine in diplomatic terms, you know, about incursions, but what people are seeing all day, every day, all night, every night are horrible civilian casualties in the cities across Ukraine. This is seen as one of the first wars that is broadcast via social media, and it has really changed how people are seeing the war. They're seeing letters from Russian soldiers back to their mothers. They're seeing these people on the front line. They're seeing, of course, the Ukrainian president doing selfie videos saying, "I'm still alive. You know, I haven't left yet." I'm curious, has there been any change in media coverage for China's state media? Has there been any change in what's going on social media?
Not much, but I do think the state media is trying to play up the tune, trying to strike a tune of somewhat optimism in this situation. For instance, the talks between Russian and Ukraine delegates yesterday, I don't think a lot of people, for instance, in Europe or in the US thought much about the talks, but that talk gained a lot of traction in China's state media. But if we, of course, if we look at the details, we knew that the talks, it was never meant to be successful, because the Russian delegate was led by a former cultural minister of Russia. And there are also people joking that, oh, this might be a bad joke by Putin, sort of making fun of Zelensky's former role as an actor. Now you have a former cultural minister to lead the talks with you. I do see the state media trying to strike a tone of more like optimism about, like, just sort of saying, hopefully this will go away soon. But other than that, the coverage has not changed much, which is, you know, trying to minimize the discussions and try not to get into too many details about what's going on on the battlefield.
Of course, I've called you both together on the line this week because there's been two, if not three, in very important meetings for the United Nations. It was the Security Council, an emergency meeting of the General Assembly, and the UN Human Rights Council. My junior rightly pointed out that India has abstained from votes. But Fimba, was there comments made at the Human Rights Council that we need to know about?
Well, I just wanted to point out that this is a while China has been abstaining at the UN in New York, this is the UN Security Council and the General Assembly. It was one of only five members of the UN Human Rights Council to actually vote against holding an emergency, an urgent debate on Ukraine. Company in which China finds itself there, Cuba, Eritrea, Russia, of course, Venezuela, and China. India abstained on that one. Also, the UAE abstained. So India, China, and the UAE had been the three countries that had abstained at the UN Security Council. Both of those maintained their abstention at the Human Rights Council, but China actively voted against it. Where does that leave, China's perceived neutrality on this, if it's blocking a debate on this at the Human Rights Council? I mean, China and the Human Rights Council have a checkered history. You know, it's often hauled over the coals because of what's happening in Xinjiang and Tibet and so on. There are no love lost between China and some other members of the Human Rights Council, but still, I thought it was just a little interesting detail which was worth mentioning.
Finbar Birmingham, my June. We'll see your reports coming up on SCP.com. Thank you very much for your time. Followers of this podcast will recognise the voice of my next guest. For years, he was the co-anchor of this podcast. He's now the tech desk editor for the South China Morning Post. Jocin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Jared.
Jocin, there's been a lot of discussion about how China might be of assistance to Russia. Now the bans on Russia's use of the SWIFT payment system has been put in place. What's the reality of that?
Well, Jared, I think we have to start from the basics. Well, there are certainly lots of talks about, when the US and the European Union and many liberal democracies start to sanction Russia, China were becoming facilitator for Russia finance and economy. But this has some misunderstandings. First of all, SWIFT is a messaging system. It's not about money flows. And so basically, if two banks want to wire money, they use the SWIFT system to communicate with each other. But it's not related to the real money. I think China would be very, very careful not to be too deeply involved or to be perceived as helping Russia to manage the sanctions. And I think Chinese government has made it very clear that China is opposed sanctions, but China is not going to say, if you sanction Russia, I'm going to help Russia. This is certainly not part of the official position. So if you can see the reaction from the Chinese banks, I mean, some Chinese state-owned banks have already started to take some actions to manage their own risks, of course. And if they are seen as helping Russia to avoid the sanctions, they will be in trouble. Bank of China, Singapore, or Bank of China in mainland China, they already started to take some measures to manage their Russia risks. So it's really difficult to say that China this time will become the financer for Russia or will become the money back for Russia. We'll write an open check to Vladimir Putin saying, if you can't get the dollars from them, I have dollars, brother. I don't think this is going to happen.
Jocin, I do recall the late, great John Carter talking on this here podcast roughly 2 years ago about how if the US decided to cut China from the SWIFT system, it would be seen as an act of war. That was at the height of the Trump anti-China trade war hype. But what are you hearing from analysts and finance experts in mainland China and here in Hong Kong watching this extraordinary level of sanction? What are people saying?
This is extraordinary. I mean, Jared, previously, like Iran or North Korea were cut off from SWIFT, they're tiny economies and not so connected to the rest of the world. But we are talking about Russia, a G20 economy. It's the world's largest kind of exporter of energy. So this is big. And for many analysts, they're saying this is a nuclear kind of financial weapon, a financial nuclear war, nuclear bomb. But according to Chinese analysts, for instance, Wang Yongli, the former Bank of China vice president, who was a border of director at SWIFT, and saying SWIFT's role has to be taken in a broader context. you know, it's more of like a symptom instead of itself. So this is more of a sign of economic decoupling and the cutting off all the financial and economic relations. This is really, really bad. This is almost like the carry of an economic war. And also, but if we look at carefully about the sanctions, we can see that some banks, you know, there are some exceptions, right? If the banks are handling energy payments, apparently looking after the interest between Germany and Russia can be exempted from this the sanction. So yeah, troubles has just the beginning because it's unprecedented. No one really can say now, give a number or give a size, how bad it will be. But everyone knows that it is bad and it will be getting worse and worse for Russian financial system and for the Russian economy.
Can I ask you, are you hearing any discussion about, you know, watching what's happened with the SWIFT system, has that spurred any, you know, enthusiasm or energy in mainland China to, you know, develop a digital yuan or develop a Chinese version of SWIFT?
Oh, I would say this just to confirm the long-standing view in China that China has to reduce its reliance on these systems that is dominated by the Western or dominated particularly by the United States. If you look at China's efforts to build up its own payment system or its own kind of reserve currency system, it actually started in 2008 instead of 2022. After the global financial crisis, and China can see that its economic size is big enough, but you know the yuan is still very, very limited. So, you know, China aspire that one day the yuan can become not a challenger to the US dollar, but at least to become a reasonable regional currency that with reasonable influence. But so far, I think the progress is quite limited because of the capital controls, et cetera. But still, this latest sanction against Russia clearly sent a message to China that, you know, these are the potential risks. Remember, you know, 1 or 2 years ago, when during the Hong Kong protest, there were lots of discussions of whether the U.S. will have this financial sanction against China, and also less than a year ago, we are also talking about whether China is going to apply its anti-sanction law in Hong Kong, you know, forcing all the banks to pick up a side. You know, all these things, you can see that this is quite serious. And now this sanction is against Russia. China is not part of this discussion. But the risk for China is there. So it's clearly sending a message to the Chinese government that they have to pay more attention to the risks because they are real. The risks are real. You see, if Russia started a war against Ukraine, and then the sanctions came. And previously, people were saying like, "Oh no, this is not going to happen." You know, the Germany will never agree to it. There will be so many interested involved, so this is not going to happen. But it happened. So this is a remote risk, but the Russian sanctions have certainly brought that remote risk much closer to Beijing's door.
That's very interesting. Now, let me just turn to, you know, the tech industry and China's massive tech industry. We are starting to see some reports that Washington is perhaps hoping to get China's tech companies to get on board with sanctions against Russian company and to stop trade of technology. What do we know about that?
Well, this is another very interesting question: how Chinese tech companies are going to respond to this sanction. I mean, on one hand, the Russian market has become an important kind of overseas market for many Chinese tech companies, Huawei, Xiaomi, you name it. On the other hand, they also, you know, globalized the companies. Huawei is already under U.S. sanctions, but Xiaomi is not. But are they really going to, like, take risks of facing economic sanctions from the Western market for sake of the Russian market? So this is a very, it will put many Chinese tech companies in a very difficult position. And that's possibly why you can see that, you know, 4 or 5 days after the war started, basically no Chinese company has come out to have a statement to make their position clear. I think for most, the reasonable response from the Chinese tech companies is just, you know, to carefully study the risks and then do like what kind of business we can do, what kind of business we cannot do, and also measures carefully the risks and the returns. Just to give you two examples, for instance, Didi is one example. Didi announced, I think, just a few days before the war started, saying, we are going to pull out from Russia and the Kazakhstan markets because the market there is certainly not very good and, you know, not enough profits or revenue to support our operation. And then just a few days later, it make a 180 degree, you know, completely revoke its previous decision saying we will committed to the Russian market when it's still operations there. And no one knows what really happened. And some analysts are saying, you know, because DiDi's pullout from the Russian market has met some opposition on Chinese internet at home, saying, how can DiDi be so close to the US and to the Western powers? You know, even to say before they announced sanctions, you just, you know, abandon the Russian market. And so this is a very awkward position for Didi Chuxing, which is a New York listed Chinese taxi hailing company, right? Also another point is the Lenovo. Okay, Lenovo has been, I think, among the first to saying, you know, as a global tech company, I have to follow, you know, I have also to go shoulder by shoulder with other tech companies. So they announced that they are going to reduce their exports to Russia. And immediately there are backlash in China saying, how can you, Lenovo, you know, a company rooted in China, you know, being so aggressive in implementing the sanctions against Russia? So from these two examples, the two public cases, you can see that for many Chinese tech companies, they have to be very, very careful, walk the fine line, because Chinese government is saying, we oppose sanctions, okay? I don't want to see Chinese companies that publicly go against the Chinese government position. On the other hand, you know, they have to, because they, apart from Russia, they have their markets in US, in Europe. You know, they have to care about the possible influences if you're seeing defying the sanctions or even deliberately help Russia to avoid these sanctions. So this is a quite interesting topic. Let's wait and see. I think more and more the statements were coming out in the coming days or weeks.
I get the feeling some of these Chinese tech companies are using what they call strategic ambiguity.
Yes, exactly.
Jocin, I know you're very busy. Thank you once again very much for your time. And we will see your reports and the tech team's reports on SCMP.com as they come in. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jared.
That's all for this emergency session of the China Geopolitics podcast. By the time you've finished listening to this, something has no doubt shifted or changed. It's a good time to go and check the front page of SCMP.com for updates. We'll be bringing you another full episode later this week in the wake of the UN vote, as well as taking a closer look at the concerns, not protests, concerns, being raised by different academics in mainland China concerning Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We will, of course, be following very closely any updates on the offer from Beijing to broker peace negotiations between the democratically elected government of Volodymyr Zelensky and Vladimir Putin's Russian regime, which Xi Jinping has pledged a limitless relationship. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And as we say here in Hong Kong, stay positive, test negative, keep your distance, but stay in touch. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.